Hey team, just a quick note just before we start. Unfortunately, the sound quality is still not perfect, so we will apologize and we are working on how we're going to improve this. Geographically, it is a problem, but hey, the content's good, so please enjoy. G'day and welcome to Machinist Therapy Hotline, a podcast made by machinists for machinists. This is episode 2. In this episode, we pick 4 topics that you have asked us, your hosts, Shane P, Tony C, Albert R, and me, Jody T. We'll have an open conversation about each and each one, and hopefully we'll get to the bottom of it. So let's get on with the podcast. Okay, so, right, welcome to episode 2, and to kick things off, Albert's got a topic for us. What have you got, Albert?
All right, I think, AC Fabrication, he was, hang on, I got to find the question here. I don't want to cut him short on what he was asking specifically.
Good to see you prepared.
Yep, always prepared. Let me just sift through all these messages here of you guys ripping on me.
Yeah. Maybe you left it on top of the machine when you were laying on it.
No, so he asked basically he started with a Haas mill. He bought a Doosan lathe that had live tooling and a subspindle. And then he got an Akuma lathe with a single spindle and live tools. And then he ended up selling his Haas mill to buy an Akuma mill. And he was saying that now as he goes forward, he really likes the Akuma machines and the control. But he feels like there's better options out there for machines. And he's not really sure if it's worth standardizing with his equipment versus like mixing and matching. So you know, I think the big thing was that he touched on was the commonality of control. And I mean, for me, this kind of struck home for me because I started my business and it was just me. And I was trying to think about like growth as, you know, as I grew into my shop, basically, you know, do I want to mix and match controls and make it more difficult for other people to pick this stuff up? Or, you know, do I want to buy the right machine for the right job? Or am I trying to, you know, just get a deal on a machine or what? It's a little bit overwhelming, I think, when you first start out.
For sure.
And you're kind of starting from the ground up. So
yeah.
I think the commonality of the control thing is good, but I think that you'd have to have a pretty solid background in other shops before you could make that decision. Like if you worked in a shop that was like all Akumas for like 10 years or something like that, and that's all you knew, or you liked it and you had a bunch of experience with other controls that you knew what you liked and what you didn't like that's one thing. But if you just don't know and you're just kind of jumping into this whole world of machining, you know, more or less on blind faith or whatever you want to call it, like, I think it's important that you're well educated about what you're buying.
Mm. Like, I don't really know what he's asking. Is it just?
It seems like it's a pretty broad question, I get where he's coming from because it can be overwhelming. But like, I think that we all kind of have some valuable experience here to add. So, I think, man, where do I start with this? Like, you want to buy the right machine for the job, obviously, you know, and that was kind of my approach. Standardization is great, but I didn't really have the experience when I was getting started to have a definitive enough opinion to be like, this is the machine I should buy because all of the machines that they make are great. But I also made kind of a safe decision too. You know, my first machine was a Haas, and you can say what you want about them, but you know, for what I was doing with it, it was good. It was kind of good, like general purpose. I didn't really know where I was going yet, and it was just a good place to kind of get my feet wet. That combined with the fact that, like, the local distributor for Haas's at the time, like, they had been around for probably 20 years, you know. Yeah. As a company, they looked like a very stable company, and that they were going to be around for years to come for support. So I think that that's like another factor for sure, is not just the machine brand, but who you're buying it from.
Yeah.
And what that company is like in your area. You know, like, do you have a strong Akuma service presence in your area? Do you think that you're going to need to have to rely on them for service?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are they treating you as a customer? Like, that, these are all things that you can should consider. It's like a little bit bigger than just the machine itself.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to say actually that is a really good point, because there is no point in buying a machine that has no support locally, because if that thing goes down, you are fucked. Like, it's a big deal.
That's your moneymaker.
Yeah,
that's true. And if I can interject here, I think if you're new or you're trying to decide what type of machine you want to buy, you're kind of in the driver's seat, in my opinion, because if you have a part that you're going to manufacture, or maybe you're trying to buy a machine that's going to make a high running part, you can send these parts out. You can send a print out. They can do a time study on these. They can tell you what they think and how long it's going to take to make these. And if you want to take it a next step further, you can have them provide you a sample part. It's kind of a turnkey situation.
Yep.
And if they really want to make the sale, you know, if they're really into their customers and they want to do them right, then they will give you a time study. And I said, well, but we think we can knock it out in this amount of time. And I said, well, what kind of finishes are you going to give me? And then, well, let's do a sample part. And then you could compare.
Yep.
And that's
100%. I think that a lot of people, when they're buying their first machine tool, I think they can be a little bit naive about it, and you need to make them work for their money. You know, buying a machine tool, I don't want to compare it to buying a car, but there's some similarities for sure. I mean, generally machine tool dealerships, they want to make money, and to do that, they need to sell machines. So you need to be careful about who the salesperson is that you have. I mean, my first, the lathe was my first like lathe that I bought, the Akuma, and the sales guy, I honestly, in hindsight, I feel like he kind of just wanted to sell a machine and he just dumped it on me. And the machine's a good machine, but it wasn't 100% what I wanted. And, you know, like I was a little salty about that. So, you know, these guys get really caught up in just like making a sale for them to make a quick buck. And you want to make sure that you're working with somebody that's in it for the long haul for you, and that like legitimately cares about you and is going to be around for years to come. So
when from my experience, that really, you know, when these machine tool guys say, oh, look, we've got a stock
red flag
that's ready to go, although It is a flag for me. And because, you know, the reality is that, you know, when you're ordering a machine, you know, we all go, oh, fuck, we want it tomorrow. But if you want something that's going to have longevity and is going to, you know, really get the exact parts out as you want them, you need to go to these guys and do what Tony said and say, here's my part. What is the machine that's going to make this part, and explain to me how we're going to do it? And make them do it, you know, because, you know, when you're talking investments from ranging from 150,000, we're talking US, 150 to 600,000 US.
Nothing is off that.
That's a lot of money. You're talking about a house or a couple of houses.
So one thing that I want to kind of say about that is, so like all we have are Mazaks, and we would probably never buy another turning center. Just because the ones that we have, the same program can run on any machine, the same part can run on any machine, and everything can interface seamlessly. But when we did look into five-axis and multitasking, we did take a look around. And the one thing that I think in this industry especially is you cannot be scared of a learning curve.
Absolutely.
Do not put yourself in that box of, you know, oh, I only want a Fanuc, or I only want, you know, OSP or whatever. I think, like Jody said, you need to really take a look and see what is the best machine for my application and what's going to pay off more in the long run.
Yeah,
I mean,
there's a lot of things to consider, you know, beyond just the, man, I mean, there's a lot of things to consider. You know, like this machine's going to last you 20 years, ideally, maybe more, you know?
Yeah.
A short summary here on this whole turnkey thing. In the very beginning, when I started getting my feet wet here with screw machines, I sent out the part and they did a time study on it. And they said, yes, we can do that with this little Star SB16. I'm like, sweet. So they brought it in. They set it up. We've got the guy in here. He starts doing the setup. He's just doing all this stuff. And I said, how are you going to mill down the slots on the back? He says, with an air tool. I said, well, we're going to need to rough and finish that. He's all, well, then I guess I need to strap two air tools to it. I go, no, we're not strapping air tools to the back of this to freaking mill out slots in a counterbore. So we hit the abort button, and they flew in an SR-32 from Japan. They flew it in and dropped it and swapped these two out within a week during the break between Christmas and New Year's. And it's because I was serious, and I gave them a sample part, and I said, look, guys,
amazing.
This shit's got to be done right. And so you kind of are in the driver's seat if you want to be serious about it. You want the right machine tool.
100%.
Exactly.
I was just gonna say one last thing from my side. Just back on the service level, you know, we purchased a machine. This is before I was involved in the machine purchasing, probably say 15 years ago. We'd purchased a DMG Gildermeister, so a sliding head machine, and it was a show.
I've been there.
So we got this machine, and it was never perfect. It never performed how it was promoted at the show. And then what happened was, you know, we suddenly realized that there was only two of these types of machines in all of Australasia. So when we had a major breakdown, I phoned up like Maury and said, look, I've got this machine. My understanding is I'm one of two people that have this machine. Is your service guy in Auckland going to be able to come down and fix this machine? And they were like, yeah, no worries. I was like, look, honestly, if not, like, I'm happy to pay for someone from wherever else in the world to come and fix this machine, because it was doing a really important part for me at the time. And they said, no, guarantee, no worries. The service guy arrives. I'm like, g'day, mate. How you going? I just want to show you down for the machine. I said, you're 100%, you know what you're doing. He's like, absolutely. We walked into the shop. Okay. He walked past the machine. And I said, yo, dude, the machine is here. 10 minutes later, I turned him around and he was back out the door. And then it cost a lot of money to get a professional over that knew about the machine. And it was really then that I said to myself, far out, any other machine that we ever buy, no matter what, we have to make sure that it is a fully supported product. Because if that machine is down for a day, that's a day. But when it's down for weeks and weeks and weeks, because no one knows
or what it looks like,
you are in serious
trouble. I had a similar story.
Or what it looks like, I know. You would have thought you would have had a photo, you know?
Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's okay. So, you know, it's just funny that you said that, because you think a lot of times people are really quick to want to jump on like a show special or something like that, or they think they're going to get like a deal at a show. And I'll be honest, I was the same way when I bought my first lathe. Mm. And it wasn't 100% what I wanted, but they gave me a sweet deal on it. I really couldn't refuse it. And at the end of the day, it has serial number 001 on it. So this was actually the first Akuma Genos lathe that Akuma ever produced.
Number one!
It was basically a prototype machine. So you can't buy this machine with the turret configuration that I have on it anywhere else. So like the tools that I use, I have to like cross-reference like a different Akuma machine for. You can't just like call up like Eppinger or something like that and be like, yo, like I've got this Genos. They're gonna try to sell you the wrong shit. So it's like, it's kind of a unicorn in a way. I mean, I can't really knock it because it makes good parts, but it wasn't 100% what I wanted, and it's kind of like this bastard child machine. So,
Yeah,
be careful. Buyer beware.
Yeah.
Bit off topic for this guy's question. You know, It's a super broad question, but yeah. In response to him, I mean, really, you've got to think about what it is that you're making. What's going to be a good fit for you? So you need to like kind of come up with like a list of like checkboxes of things that you absolutely need this machine to do. And you kind of need to think through all these scenarios, like what if it breaks down or what if service isn't available? Like, and you know, only you can answer that. That's kind of specific for his needs. So to be able to define your own needs, like pretty clearly yep. is I think probably the best solution for him right now.
Okay. So let's move on, shall we? Next topic is, picked by me, and this came from Peter. His Instagram name is Move Freedies, if I've pronounced that correctly. I'm not sure, but you yeah. can check.
That's what I thought it was.
Is that what it is?
Obviously, we really? Don't spend enough time on Instagram dicking around, Jody, to understand what this is.
Whoa, okay. Well, anyway, if you're listening, you can go onto our Instagram account and you can have a look for this particular topic.
All right.
And Peter's account is there. Click on it and have a look. So anyhow, he said, can you give me some advice on the do's and don'ts about being a new shop foreman or new manager for your factory? This is quite a tough question, eh? Like, because it's so person dependent and also environment dependent when you're first starting out. And there are a lot of guys that they are phenomenal machinists. They are like true artists of their craft, but then they go into a supervisory position
yep.
and it all starts to go to pot because They're not.
Yeah.
Like, people do not act like machines. They don't. You can't manipulate people. Well, you can to a certain degree, but you can't suddenly go, I really don't like when you talk to me like
yeah.
that. You know, like it just doesn't work in that scenario. And I'm assuming that Peter is going into this type of position. And you know, can I give him instant advice about how to be a great shop foreman or manager? Not really. I think the only comment I could really say is that you have to always go into these roles with full integrity and also understand that when you step up to that next level, if that is what you believe you need to get to, that the people around you will start acting differently once you do that. And you might think, oh, I've got these great friends, and now that I'm the supervisor, yeah. it'll be great because we're just going to carry
yeah,
on.
Yeah,
like
it doesn't work
are.
That way.
Unfortunately, yeah. that it does not work like that because, you know, you can't. And you have to disconnect that. And it's and that can be really tough for people. And I've seen you know, some good guys just fail because they're just not really made to be a foreman, whether it be at that time or whatever. But the other reality is that often these mm-hmm. people, they get these opportunities because they're really good at their job, but they were trained mm-hmm. to be this skilled person, this skilled machinist. And then they're put into a position that they have not been trained into doing. And
they don't teach people skills in machinist school.
Not only being a manager or being a shop owner, I've worked at plenty of places and I know what I didn't want to do. And the Get to Know Me podcast we had, y'all knew I had a drill sergeant for a freaking my first or second boss. And so that's not how I wanted to treat people. And I know facial expressions are quite obvious. I get told that a lot. So you try to take care of your people, and especially if they're good, you really want to keep them. And one of the things that I did when I started this shop was I created an environment that I didn't have at other places I worked. I epoxied the floor, I put in bright lights, I put in heat and air, so when it's 105 outside in Ukiah, we're running at 73 and everybody's happy. And so then we've got all the machines are ventilated or exhausted outside. You know, it's a good working environment. And, you know, I try to do my best, but I, you know, there's going to be times where people, you know, thinking that I'm grumpy or things have gone bad. And there's a million things going on in a shop foreman slash owner head. And you, a guy could walk up to me one time and ask me, hey, we're out of these inserts. And I could turn around and look at him, and I don't want to give him a look that's like, you idiot, why didn't you tell me yesterday? And it's not the look that I meant to give him, because it's like three looks ago, I'm working with somebody else that wants something cheaper than China. So it's like, you know, you got to really focus on what you're doing. And to shorten it up here, one time I had a guy doing an install, an apps guy from Star, and I was running this old LB15 loading these Hulacious 17-4 slugs, drilling a 2-inch Sandvik drill, and just running them all day. And I had a full crew running behind me, and people asked me questions. And I took him out to dinner that night, and he gave me a compliment that I'll never forget. And he says, you know, I've never been in a shop where the owner has been down on the floor loading freaking slugs, moving chips, changing inserts, answering questions, and not expecting his crew to do anything that he wouldn't do himself. And I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
Stop the podcast. Did you know, Tony, that you, if you go onto Anchor FM, can leave us a voice message?
Well, suck me off with a breast pump, Jodis. I did not know that. Tell me how.
Well, all you need to do is when you log into your account, click on the leave a voice message for Machinist Therapy Hotline, and guess what? You'll be able to leave us a direct message.
Well, golly, I'll be sure to do that, and I am so glad you informed me how.
Okay, and on with the podcast.
I feel gamers flying out of the gamers.
Oh my god.
Man, we're made for this, Jody.
Oh my god, I just, yeah, like it could be you, me, and Titan. Fuck yeah, boom! Boom.
So, it's your topic now, Tony.
Start out with this guy, and I will not pronounce his name correctly, I fucking guarantee you. It is Gert Jan Potkamp. Is that a friend of yours, Boomer?
I follow him.
Okay, am I pronouncing it right? No, okay, well, that makes two of us. His question was, do you think there's conventional machining? Do you think there's always going to be a need for that? Or, you know, what's your thoughts on that? And I think he's really, you know, wondering what the thoughts are on that. And the first shop that I worked at was all manual. And that's where I learned how to sharpen a drill and grind a lathe bit and cut some threads. And it was interesting. Mm-hmm. And the manual guys, I mean, maybe I came in at a different time, but the manual guys were always the oldest, and they were always pretty much making top dollar, and they pretty much always knew their shit. And very responsible people. And so my first job was, I had a drill press that had three drill presses in the gang. It was a drill, a chamfer drill, and a tapping machine. And in the corner was an old retired guy that tried to retire, but they brought him back, and they bought him a couple of gear machines because he was a gear cutter. He'd been around forever. And, you know, I walked over to him one time because I saw he was running his lathe, and he had his compound was slid to the side instead of at the regular degrees where you would cut threads and such. And as I walked up to him, he covered up his prints, and I'm all, oh, am I bothering? He's all, no, you just can't see these. And I said, well, oh, okay, sorry. I was just wondering why your compound was, you know, twisted all the way around facing the spindle. He's all, well, because it's more rigid that way, son. And I'm like, wow, okay, well, that's, you know, something that I didn't know, but I asked, and the guy was a sharp cookie. Another guy that I worked with, you know, these guys that are manual guys, I look to as one-offs or prototype. That's the first thing that popped into my mind. They usually are thinking two or three steps ahead on something they're going to do if the boss walks up to them and asks them, because at the end of the day, you got to be holding on to it correctly and have something left to hold on to be able to finish the job. But not only do that, but you got to be able to have concentricity and flatness, or, you know, a lot of things are taken for granted for these new kids coming up that want to sit down at the computer and play with CAD CAM and twist things around in multiple renders and look at things in all types of different degrees. You know, if you were taught to go out there and sharpen your own drill bit and see how it feels to pull on a drill press and drill through a plate of steel, whether it's sharpened correctly or incorrectly, you would learn that. If you sharpened your own lathe tool and you knew if it cut free and gave you a good finish or if it gave you a bad finish, you would know that. I see guys today still that are qualifying tools on a CNC. It doesn't matter what kind of CNC it is. If they come down, they want to take a face cut and establish zero, and they're running the WNMG 432 or 433, whatever it may be, and they're cranking that little hand wheel 100 miles an hour. They do not know that they're facing through 2 inches of stainless and taking off maybe 30.
They can't feel it.
They can't feel it. It's like 30,000 on the insert growling, and they're like, I just put this insert in here. Why is what's wrong? It's, I think everybody, would be a better machinist if they started doing manual work. I really do, because
100%.
You need to be taught how things work correctly.
Yeah.
And it's just, it to me, it's a given. I mean, I was taught so many things from people. You know, I was doing a shaft one day and I was trying to put a groove in it, and the groove was like, you know, 120 thou wide. And I thought, well, I'm going to get after it with this Sandvik insert. You know, it's 94 thou. I'm going to just plunge it and hit it twice. And man, I tried it two times on two setup pieces, and that groove had more chatter than a room full of blondes. It looked terrible. And so this guy, he says, give me that insert. I said, what are you going to do to it? He's like, well, first of all, we have to give it a little positage rake and give it the old Chinook hook. I'm like, what the fuck is a Chinook hook? And so he went and ground it.
Yeah.
And so then he goes, and the next thing we're going to do is we're going to take the center out a little bit. So you're going to cut with it. I mean, you got room to move from side to side. We're going to cut with the edges, and it's going to relieve so much tool pressure. You're going to be blown away. And man, he goes, go plug this in and come back after break. Tell me how it looks.
Yeah.
And I came back and it was perfect. And I just like, you know, I would have never thought of that shit on my own. So manual guys, you know, even in your shop, no matter what shop they are, whether they don't have a whole lot to do or whatever, but you know, the CNC guys are ready to rock and roll and they're going to need a fixture for op three. Well, who's going to make that fixture? Probably the manual guy. He's going to dowel pin it. He's going to freaking do whatever he needs to do. You're going to put your part down on there and you're going to hit it, and it's going to be good. There's times where I had holders that couldn't reach high enough when my lathe was too little and I was trying to cut something that was too big, and he would cut a holder in half and weld it to the next side of the holder and place it up higher so I could turn a 15-inch on a 10-inch chuck. I mean, that kind of stuff is, in my opinion, is invaluable.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to move on to my second part. I'm trying to make it quick. Okay. The second one was Legends and Jedis. Yep. And that is a question from Keeler27K. He wanted to know my thoughts, or anybody's thoughts, all of our thoughts, on guys that came in and either thought they acted like they knew it all or really did believe they knew it all. And I've experienced that a few times in my lifetime right so far. One of the shops I was at, we hired a guy in the morning as a journeyman. And I happened to be in earshot of the military boss that I've referred to in the past. And he says, do you really think you're cut out for this job? And he's all, yes, I used to work at my father's shop. And he's all, well, okay, well, here's what we're going to have you do today. You think you can handle it? He's all, it's just all ODs and IDs. And he was going to run a lathe. And so, well, he went to run that lathe. And by lunchtime, he was fired as a journeyman. And they rehired him as an apprentice. And then by 5 o'clock p.m., they let him go as an apprentice. And then he loaded up his red toolbox. I want to add this. If you come into a shop full of guys that have already been getting along and you act like you know it all or you think you know it, if you're a newbie trying to come in, it's going to be a lose situation for you. I mean, machinists are very particular. My advice, Keeley, is, you know, like I said in the earlier post, anybody you walk by and you see somebody doing something differently, you need to be a sponge. You need to ask them. You can't walk over to their machine and ask them what they're doing right there. You catch them at break time and say, I saw you doing this like that. Why? And if you are polite to them and you come at them with respect, then they will share their information with you. And when they do share their information with you, you're going to learn more. You're going to move further. And you need to communicate with your fellow workers and not be a pompous ass or a donkey. I mean, you need to respect what they're doing. And maybe I was lucky. Like I said, I was one of the younger guys that came in a lot of different shops that I was at. And I really paid attention. And I learned a lot from these guys. And, you know, there's nothing like that. You know, one more reference I have is a guy that he came in to our shop, and he was from Hewlett Packard, which has changed hands many times out here in California. But it's one of the famous places that made one of the calculators. A lot of tooling guys worked there. And he came into our shop. He had a Kennedy top box, Kennedy mid box, a Gerstner bottom. And he was going to do a repeat job that we've done before on the manual Bridgeport several times. And they had a time study on that. And he took three times longer than what one of the fellow guys that I've known forever did. And but what the really weird thing was, when he got done, he thought that he really kicked that one out of the park. And he was really discouraged that when we told him that it took three times longer, because he came from an environment where in the corner of their shop, and I've been at this shop, they have actual popcorn popping machines. I'm not just talking about air ones. They have their red ones with the freaking butter and the heat lamps and everything and the little bags on the side. And they just, you know, basically go at their own pace, go at their own speed. I have a friend there today, and they have a couple of index machines there, CNC, twin, spindle, turret, B-axis, swiveling head, all kinds of shit. Brand new. It's been there for a year on a couple, and they've made 250 parts in a year. And that just blows me away. You know, I mean, who can put that type of expensive machine into their shop and get that kind of production out of it? It's beyond me. So that's a whole different environment. And so when he came into ours, he was really he was shocked. And he wore a smock. You got to kind of watch out for those guys that wear smocks. Because if they wear a smock and they tie it up, they like to hear themselves talk more than they actually like the machine. If you come in the shop and you're running a black Ben Davis apron, you're probably all right. If you're wearing a blue one, well, that's okay if it's Casual Friday. I mean, I'm all right with that. But if you're wearing a smock, we've got some problems. Oh my God. I tell you what, you should have been the shop.
I can see the Instagram already. Oh my God.
So sit down, learn a lesson. I'm going to finish this up by going, communication is key. Instagram, like I said, everybody needs to communicate, get along with each other. I bet there was a lot of people shocked when I needed to borrow a live tool and I was starting a new shop in Omaha, Nebraska, and my buddy Jody sent me one from New Zealand. That was pretty freaking awesome. We had that son of a bitch running. You know, when I get stuck on a screw machine, I am no screw machine specialist. You guys know this. Foxy Body Mike, I'm going to do a shout out to him. He's helped me out numerous times. I mean, I don't know what the hell I'm doing on a star. I get things jammed up, and he's all, are you ready? And he'll send me a message, and I'll plug all this shit in, and he's bailed me out several times. So to sum this all up, Legends and Jedis, just be kind, be a sponge, absorb, get along, and
yeah, you're all on the same team.
The world will be a better place.
I feel like this almost goes a little bit with becoming a new supervisor thing as well. You know, some of these guys go into that and go, you know, like I was saying, they suddenly turn into this totally different person that thinks that they're then instantly higher than everybody else. And they go, I'm a supervisor.
You're exactly right. That does happen a lot.
You don't.
That's how I always say, the person that wants to be in charge, don't put them in charge. Because that's typically the attitude that they have.
You're exactly right.
Yeah. That's like, you know, something better like to that. Be a taker than a giver. Is that what you mean? Okay, so on that note, let's move on.
All right, so Jerry Lodholz,
your topic,
and
buddy.
Bats Collector, they wanted to know about finding good employees and retaining them. And I felt kind of weird about picking this subject because this is something that we struggle with. But because of that, I wanted to bring it up because I know everybody struggles with that. And I want people to know, you know, they're not the only ones. And so it kind of rolls into, you know, what Tony was just saying. You know, we put ads out on Indeed, on Monster, on Craigslist. We go to the local colleges, the high schools that have programs. The last batch of resumes I got from the local JC, two people never called me back, and then a third one blew me off three different times.
Wow.
And then, you know, then we get a guy that comes in and he has, he's got a full Gerstner bottom, mid, top box. He showed me his journeyman card from Lockheed Martin, and he was the biggest piece of shit I've ever worked with in my life.
Wow.
The day he got hired,
don't hold back.
The first day he showed up to work, his attitude was 150% different than when we interviewed him. And just no one liked him, and he did us a favor and he left. So something that we try to do is a lot. Well, Tony already covered it. Really, you know, you try to make it the nicest place. Our floors are polished. We have air scrubbers in there. Mm-hmm. On top of, we have mist collectors, and then we have air scrubbers. I think we got six of them. And we change the filters every 3 weeks. You know, and we try to make it a really nice environment for people. And it's still, you get people that come in and they don't appreciate it, and then they're gone. But it's trying to retain people. I think it's, you know, you have to keep people moving. You have to keep, you know, you kind of recognize, you know, okay, this guy's really got it. Like, I need to really focus on this guy. And then you'll have other guys, and you're like, you know what? This guy's never going to go further than he is right now, and this is just a check for him. So, which also isn't a bad thing, because you need someone to do that kind of work a lot of the time. And someone that's not going to complain about it and bitch about it, and, you know, if they do a good job. So we've had better luck kind of starting people out, you know, in the saw, or we've had a couple interns from the high schools that we've ended up hiring, and they'll come intern and we move them throughout the facility. Like they'll be over in assembly and testing, and then we'll bring them over and they'll kind of just shadow someone in the shop. And then we'll put them in inspection, and they'll just do some menial stuff there. And then that way too, now they know what to expect. And, you know, we sit them down and we talk to them, you know, is this something you'd want to do? And one of my best guys, he started out as an intern, and then they hired him for production assembly. And then we had a guy quit, and he said, hey, I want a machine. And so I think at that point, when people already know your company and people already know kind of how things work there, it's a little bit easier to transition, you know, someone in like that. And then it's also someone that has no bad habits as far as machining goes. And you can
blank slate.
Yeah. And you can mold them into exactly what fits for your shop and what you need. This town, it's a really small area, and I can usually make, you know, two phone calls and find a lot out about somebody. So it's really difficult, but we've really kind of, I don't want to say given up on finding, you know, experienced people that can just come in and start making parts day one. We're always on the lookout for that, but we've kind of been focusing our energy on going after younger people that really don't have any experience, and just kind of growing them within.
Yeah, I see. I mean, I look at your pictures of your shop, and I see the equipment that you guys have, and I think, you know, you're like the best / worst case scenario with the problems, because you have some of the nicest equipment, some of the nicest environment, but yet you're having the worst of luck trying to get people to come there. You get them there, but they won't freaking stay there. And I'm like, you're going to leave and go do something else. Like you said, you know, it's like, I don't understand that. And I think a lot of it is just people's mentality these days. But I mean, back when I was coming up and in the shops that I worked in, I would have given anything to be in an environment like that. And even if I had an asshole boss, I would have dealt with it because it looks like you guys have great tooling, you have great equipment. I mean, you know, what else are you guys looking for?
Stuff too.
Exactly. You know?
We're not making
exactly.
Like, you know, parts for farm equipment or something.
Yeah.
You know. And I mean, we even Jody came by and he met a couple of the owner or one of the owners. He met our the head of HR, and I introduced him to a bunch of people around there. And I mean, we do a company lunch every month. We do a big summer party, and it's at one of the owner's house. Like she invites everybody over to her personal house.
Does she have Mickey's there?
No, I bring my own.
Oh.
I have a friend that he just went to another place, and they called him up out of the blue, and he threw out what he thought was a crazy number. And they didn't even flinch. And they said, come on over. Let's talk.
Yeah, that was going to be my next interjection there, Boomer, was you guys have tried to hire off the line and off of, you know, Craigslist and shit like that. But, I mean, it sounds to me like your company is almost in a position where they need to put someone like maybe like yourself that needs to go out and actually headhunt somebody, find somebody that already working somewhere that knows their shit and says, hey, you're making this much. Here's what we got. We could promise you this much OT, this much vacation. You know, you got the benefits. I mean, this is what I've experienced in my older years at other job shops. That's how you, one, if you were the employee getting headhunted, you made more money quickly that way because I'm going to move you from location A to location B for another $5 an hour. And then the person that's trying to get that person gets key people and they use them and they put them in the position and they start pumping out parts and making money. And I don't think you're going to be able to skim off the top and just get what you guys are looking for because you guys are moving too quick and you need some good help.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I've talked to a few different people on Instagram about things like that. I've gone and, you know, gone to other shops and checked them out and kind of talked to their key guys a little bit. And it was something I felt kind of weird about. Like, I wouldn't want someone coming in or, you know, trying to headhunt one of my guys. And so I always felt a little weird about it, but I mean,
it happens, man.
Yeah. And then we put in a weekend shift of Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or I mean, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, sorry. And you work 3/12s, you get paid for 40, and then you have 4 days off. And the guys that are on that shift, you would never pry them off of that shift. Like, they love it. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, it's still technically considered an off shift. Like, you know, Monday through Friday is usually, during the day, is usually what everyone strives for. But, so that's kind of worked, and that's helped. It's attracted a few different people. That came there just because we had that as an option. And then.
Can you believe it? Episode 2 has finished. Well, guess what? In 2 weeks' time, we'll be recording episode 3, and you will be able to contact us via our Instagram account on Machinist Therapy Hotline. Alternatively, log into your Anchor FM podcasting account and leave us a voice message. We will discuss your topic. Thanks again, guys, and we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.